Well, hi everybody, and I want to welcome today. I have a fabulous lady with me today called Liz Bowie. So welcome, Liz.
Thank you.
Lovely to be with you today.
Lovely to be here.
Thank you so much for coming along.
You're welcome.
Liz is currently a beauty therapist, and she really pampers and looks after her clients these days, and she offers really wonderful body treatments and pretty much the whole thing really, Liz, don't you? Sort of,
yes.
face,
massage, manicures, pedicures, sugaring, anything beauty, I can do it.
And really, you know, help people to sort of relax and feel great.
Absolutely.
Okay, and I know that the products that you use are all kind of natural and mineral,
yes,
products.
Mineral-based makeup, which is very good for the skin.
Yeah.
Also, other products are all paraben-free. Parabens are linked to cancer these days.
Yes.
And they say that when you put products on the skin and parabens are there, they're absorbed through the bloodstream.
Really?
Yes, so that's why they're linked to cancer. So a lot of parabens are preservatives that stops the product from going off. So now a lot of companies are stopping using the parabens within their products for that reason.
So really important, because obviously some of the people,
yes,
that you treat, that would have, you know, have a really,
absolutely,
bad effect, especially if they're people that are very sensitive to,
yes,
products and things. So, mum of two, a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old,
yes,
and a partner as well,
yes,
and an ex-husband.
And an ex-husband, yes.
But the reason that Liz has agreed to come along and talk to us today is that Liz was diagnosed in 2001 with fibromyalgia,
yes,
and was extremely, extremely unwell.
Yes.
And now, of course, he's completely recovered and is sitting here looking an absolute picture of health. So that's fantastic. And what is great is that, Liz, you're going to go through with this a little bit so that you can help others,
yes,
that are suffering, and
absolutely,
and kind of give them a bit of a rundown on what your story was.
Yes.
So, Liz, take us back to when you were first ill. What were your symptoms?
When I was first ill, my symptoms were my joints, aches and pains all over. Couldn't sleep, had palpitations. One day I would get up, it would be my wrist. The next day I would get up, that would be gone and it would be my elbow. Then I could be okay for a couple of days, and then I would get up and my ankle would be sore. And then it would maybe switch again a couple of days later, it would be my knee. I was always going for physiotherapy. I had private health care at that point, so I was able to use that, thankfully, because other than that, I wouldn't have been able to afford it. And it just went on like that, constantly feeling really, really tired. Sit down on the couch or the sofa or whatever, even sitting down having a coffee with someone, as the person was speaking to me, I could feel myself really, really as if I wanted to go to sleep. However, when I went to bed in the evening, I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
Again, waking up in the middle of the night, sore backs, more so my hips. My hips in general were particularly sore at that point. And your sacroiliac joint is a very, very, very strong joint. And I dislocated mine at one time.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had a lot of injuries, always picking up injuries. Went to do any exercise, I would knock myself out for about a fortnight, couldn't do anything. So if I went out running, then I couldn't walk for about 5 days after,
yeah,
that.
Sounds really familiar.
Yeah.
That's kind of very similar to my history too. So obviously you had these pains coming. What would you say, if 10 was really excruciating, what level do you think your pain would have been on sort of a 0 to 10 scale?
Eventually, you're looking at right up there, a 9 or 10.
Really?
Yes, uh-huh. I couldn't walk up the stairs in my house one evening. I remember particularly bad, my ex-husband was out, and my son had got up and he'd come downstairs and he'd fallen asleep on the sofa, and I couldn't lift him up the stairs, and my husband was out for hours, and I got so frustrated and angry, and he came in and we ended up having a row.
Yeah.
Because he'd been out.
Yeah.
It wasn't his fault, he was...
Yeah,
keeps out.
Yes,
nothing. But that was, it made me so, I felt so helpless.
Yeah.
He had to carry my son up the stairs, and I crawled up the stairs that evening on my hands and knees.
Really? I mean, thinking about it, obviously being a mum and a wife, what impact can you remember it having on your sort of daily daily life
on my daily, more so when I had the children. I couldn't do things, couldn't lift the children, the children couldn't jump on me as they were getting older, things like that. Couldn't do, there was a lot of things I couldn't do with the children. Couldn't go to the park and run about and play with them.
Yeah.
Couldn't do anything like that. So the children were always used to say, no, we can't do that to Mum, we can't lean on her, we can't do anything like that, because it was too sore. And they always did everything with their dad.
Oh, it's really hard, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Hard on you. So looking back, what do you believe were the triggers to your health problems?
The truth, my relationship with my husband was one of the main things, but I didn't realise that at the time.
No, you don't, do you?
You do it? No. Looking back now, being out of that relationship was one of the things that made a difference. And I think also a lot of issues that I had when I was growing up, from being up much younger, because my mum was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Things like that. So,
okay.
Yeah, and she was always ill. Always saying she was ill. Things like that. And I think a lot of the time you take that on as well.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of age were you when you were dealing with that?
At that age, well, I was high school. Maybe, what, 12, 13, 14?
Yeah.
Those sort of ages was the age I struggled with the most.
Yeah.
Because I was more aware of what was going on, whereas when I was younger, you're maybe not so aware, or
no,
someone hiding the fact that they're drinking, stuff like that. And my mother used to keep a lot of us off school, because she didn't like to be in the house on her own. So a lot of my sisters didn't get a good education. And I used to get up in the morning really early and leave the house at 7 o'clock before my mum would get up, so she wouldn't keep me off school.
Really? So you learned your strategies, how to get around it.
Yeah.
So you've always been pretty determined.
Yes.
So now we know why you've managed to get well from fibromyalgia, because it really does take, doesn't it?
Yes.
That kind of,
yes,
determination.
And absolutely.
And decision, because yes. So it would have been so easy for you to have just literally said, well, that was my upbringing.
And that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I also read a lot of psychology books, because as part of my HND, I have a higher national unit in psychology. And I read a lot of psychology magazines and books.
Yeah.
And I've got one in particular that I've read, and it's with regards to children growing up and with regards to the young mind. And it talks about learned behaviour, how children grow up to be what they have received within the home, what they've learnt within that home, all of that. But sometimes there's one person that a child will get an experience from that makes them want to be different.
Yes. Yeah.
Because a lot of my family have turned out not so good, and maybe more like what my mother was. But I haven't.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I had, and for me now, I know the influences were my friends.
Yes.
And their families.
Yeah.
And my older sister's mother-in-law, who had her own shop, and she used to ask me to go and help her, and I would go in there and do that. And I saw the other side of life and what you could do.
Around, it sounds like you've always been quite industrious.
Yes.
Yes. Tell me about that. Did you find that was your solace? Did you sort of go and do things?
Yes, I from the age of 13 I was working. I worked in a fish and chip shop in the evening when I would come home from school. I always, on a Saturday, I would go and help in the shop with my older sister's mother-in-law, things like that. I was always out with my friends, and really, to be honest, wanted to get out of the house, wanted to get away from that environment, to try and be what I could see was normal.
Yes.
From other people, because they weren't living the lives that I was living, and I thought, well, this is not right.
Yeah. It's great that you recognised that,
yes,
wasn't it, and was able to sort of carve your way, really.
Yes.
So what for you, I mean, what was your personal turning point with your fibromyalgia? So 2001, how long did you have it for?
Well, in 2001, what happened was I'd been with a company for 10 and a half years, and I wasn't getting made redundant, I volunteered.
Yeah.
And through that company, we had private healthcare. And because I'd been so ill all the time with all these the tiredness, the aches and the pains, the injuries I was picking up. I actually feel as if I was going off my head, I've got to say. I really thought I was going mad. And it was the physiotherapist that said to me, there's something wrong with you, because this is not normal, what you're going through. So I was being made redundant, or I decided to choose to be made redundant, because I wanted to pursue my beauty therapy career. Mm-hmm. And we were allowed to have the healthcare for a further 6 months, the private healthcare. So I decided, right, while I've got this, I need to find out what's wrong with me. So I went to my doctor and I said to him, right, I need to know, because I can't continue like this, because I don't want to be ill. And I felt as if nobody was really interested or willing to help,
yeah,
to be honest. So he referred me privately. And that was what made me think, right, because I knew I wasn't going to have that blanket of protection from the private healthcare.
Yeah.
And I thought, right, let's find out now what is wrong. So that was what made me do it.
Okay, and then what happened?
Well, what happened then was I was referred to a rheumatologist who, my doctor had to write me a referral letter, which he did. Went to see the rheumatologist, who is Dr. Marshall, was fantastic. Anyway, he sat with me and he asked me everything about, he wrote everything down, how I felt, what was wrong with me, way back when it started, all that type of thing. And he then said, right, now let's look and see what your doctor's written. So he took the letter and read the letter out to me. And the doctor actually thought that I was suffering from fibromyalgia as he'd went through my medical records and saw all of the problems I was having with tiredness, aches, pains. So the rheumatologist did a lot of tests. At one point, my hair had been falling out as well. But I think that was due to just after having children, hormones. And he thought, well, it could be lupus, because symptoms are quite similar. So, but they can tell if it's lupus by a blood test. And it wasn't, thankfully. Which, because, again, that could have been much worse. So he sat me down and explained everything about fibromyalgia. What he did say was that a lot of the time fibromyalgia is that people don't want to be helped.
Interesting.
That a lot of it is a frame of mind, and how, if that person quite likes to be ill, likes the attention that they get from the illness as well. Also, what he said was they didn't know what caused it, but as far as he was concerned, it was the body's way of saying, hold it, you are doing way too much, you're not looking after me, and this is how I'm going to show you how you're not looking after me, because something needs to change.
Sounds like a very enlightened rheumatologist, really,
yes,
doesn't he?
Yes.
And I'm sure that there are people that maybe are listening to this that will be quite affronted and offended by the fact that someone is saying that there is a payoff for this illness.
Yes.
That, you know, however, you know, the more people we talk to that have recovered, the more people we work with, it's an unconscious thing. People aren't aware necessarily that that's what they're doing.
Yes.
And so the discovery part is where you start to really find out what needs to change.
Yes.
So, you know, the body stopping you is giving you an opportunity,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes. He said it was sometimes it could be caused by a trauma, whether it be an emotional trauma or a physical trauma, something that's really affected the body, and that's the body saying, right, stop. And yes, some people may be offended that he says some people don't want to be helped, but I suppose it's like any illness.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people in all illnesses that don't want to be helped.
Yes, absolutely. You know, the pain is very real.
Yes.
But what we're realising is that once the decision is made, and once you want to get well, that's a big part of it.
Absolutely. Yes.
Definitely.
And it's also, as the rheumatologist put across to me as well, it's about, because you're in this cycle of you can't sleep, you've got aches and pains, But if you exercise, it makes the aches and pains worse. If you don't exercise, then you're not going to get that sleep. It's going to, because obviously if you're exercising, it's going to help you sleep when you go to bed at night.
Yeah.
So it's a vicious circle.
So you're immobile, and so everything gets stagnant and toxic, and lactic acid builds up, and so you go round and round and round. So you can see why people get really frustrated.
Yes.
I mean, you must have felt that.
Oh, because I tried so much. I was going to the gym, and then, but like that for weeks, I couldn't do anything else.
No.
Because I was so sore. I was picking up injuries, all of that. But it was realizing that I wasn't doing it right, and I wasn't starting at the very, very bottom.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm working my way up to being able to go to the gym without actually injuring myself.
So when you saw the rheumatologist, and that was a big turning point for you.
Yes, he referred me to, he ran a support group, him and his physiotherapist, and he referred me to a 6-week program of physiotherapy.
Right. Okay. What happened around your pain and everything? I know that you said that there was some medication.
Yes. He put me on because what I had done previous to that, I had suffered a urinary tract infection, and I was prescribed these strong painkillers because it's very painful if anyone's had that, which has nothing to do with fibromyalgia. It's just an infection. However, I was prescribed these really strong painkillers. And what I noticed was these painkillers were helping the other aches and pains after the infection had gone. So I used to go to my doctors, and he would continue to give me these. So the rheumatologist said, well, that's fine. Continue to get them from your doctor if they're going to help with you. However, he also said that I could take ibuprofen. Or ibuprofen, however people pronounce it, to help with any inflammation in the body. But he also put me on a drug called amitriptyline, which is, he did tell me exactly what it was. He said that it used to be used for depression. It's an antidepressant. However, they stopped using it for depression, and they use it for the body to absorb the painkillers better.
Right.
Now, when you use it for depression, it's 175 milligrams minimum, whereas with fibromyalgia or pain relief, you use 30 milligrams. So I started off at 10 and gradually increased to 30 milligrams. And he said to do that for 6 months, just to try and break the cycle where I could get some sleep, get into the level 4 sleep where the body repairs itself, because that doesn't happen. And be able to exercise, not have injuries, and if there was any injuries there, then the body would repair itself while I was sleeping.
Yeah. So it was a very gradual, well-supported process.
It was, yes. And he only wanted me on those drugs for 6 months.
Yeah.
However, that didn't happen. And that was my GP. It wasn't him.
Yeah.
Because after I had finished with him, I was then, that's me, I was discharged. And after 6 months came, I went back to my GP, and I said to him, right, Dr. Marshall said that I was only to go on this drug for 6 months, and that's me, I've been on it 6 months. And he said that he'd had other patients with fibromyalgia, and every time they tried to come off it, the symptoms just come back. So as far as he was concerned, he was quite happy for me to stay on it, and everything would be fine.
Okay, so that was, so you ended up being on medication for
two and a half years.
Yeah.
Put 2.5 stone on.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Really depended on the drugs. However, still really had to watch what I was doing.
Yeah.
So even though I was on the drugs, I still had some symptoms.
Okay.
I still couldn't go to the gym because, as well, I was carrying so much weight.
Yeah.
Which didn't help.
Okay. So, in terms of, you had the medication and the support to release the pain, and I know we're going to talk in a moment about the specific exercises that you did, because I know that for fibromyalgia, I was really intrigued that you had a specific type of exercise that helped relieve it.
Yes.
But what about the emotional changes? What, obviously you said your relationship, what do you think What were the changes that you made that got you to today where you're drug-free and well?
The changes that I made, I would say, as my relationship with my husband got worse, and I became a stronger person emotionally as well as built up my career, things like that. I noticed that my husband was very resentful of that as well. And that's quite draining.
Yes,
very draining. So without going into too many, much details about obviously the split up, I would say since I've separated with my husband, I'm even better because I don't have that emotional baggage of being called names, being spoke to as if someone really hates you,
yeah,
and they're supposed to love you,
yeah,
and you know, and silly things like when he would take pictures of you in a really horrible position that made you look awful, and when he was videoing you on holiday, you know, you're taking a video and saying horrible things about you.
Wounding.
Yes, yeah. Uh-huh, you know. So, and then you're listening to that back. It does have an effect. If someone keeps telling you that you're naughty, you're going to believe that.
Yeah.
If someone keeps telling you that you're ugly, you're going to believe that. If someone keeps telling you that you're fat, you're going to believe it.
So to keep knocking your self-esteem,
yes,
and to be in a relationship where that's happening,
yes,
the body is going to give you some messages and some warning,
yes,
isn't it?
See, right, you know, you.
Yeah.
I think all of that, I think it was the relationship with my husband, and that was one of the main things that started off, because of, I know I went through some things when I was younger, but I moved away from my family when I was 16.
Yeah.
So, and went out and started my own life, and was absolutely fine, and at that point didn't have any symptoms.
No.
The symptoms only got worse, or came about, was, and when looking back now, was when the relationship started to go wrong.
And this is the key, isn't it? It's looking for,
yes,
the links and the causes and,
yes,
the triggers.
Yes.
Because that's what enables you to protect yourself now.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
So that.
And I truly, I think as well, I don't think, to be honest, that he liked the fact that after seeing Dr. Marshall and how well I had felt, okay, I know I was on medication, but I'd felt much better than I'd ever felt,
yeah,
for a long time. And I don't think you like that either. Maybe it's a bit of losing control over you.
Yes, so I do a lot of work with ladies in those kinds of positions,
yes,
and it's the difference between love and control.
Yes.
And it won't surprise you to know that it's also often a huge element in ME,
yes,
suffering and,
yeah,
fibromyalgia. So, you know, the body is so clever. It's this amazing satellite navigation system. It's just that we tend to ignore it.
Exactly. And that's
and,
the thing, I ignored it
and
for a
fight
long
it.
Time.
You know, yeah, and I think that was the language I heard you say at one point.
Yeah.
You know, you fight the illness, you fight your body.
Yes.
And your body is trying to actually be,
yes,
be your friend.
Yes, because for years I did try and fight it. I just tried to go on, took things like energy drinks to try and get me through everything, drank loads of coffee, yeah, just,
yeah. So yeah, when you're in total denial, your body is starting to break down, and,
yes,
what do? We just
keep pushing and pushing and pushing and fighting it. And that was one of the things that Dr. Marshall also said to me. And I know now, looking back, that I was very, very lucky to actually be referred to that rheumatologist.
You were,
because certainly, when I hear other people who,
yes,
have been referred to other rheumatologists,
yeah,
and they didn't get the support that I got. And that was the one thing that he said as well, was that it's the body's way of telling you, hold it, you need to slow down and something needs to change.
It's like the thing that gave you that determination, that strong will to get out of a difficult family life,
yes,
and to push forward and develop a career, is also the thing that can be the most damaging, because we,
yes,
push through the illness,
yes,
and we don't
drive.
Yeah,
drive in,
yeah,
house, yes.
You feel you're invincible,
yes,
don't you?
Yes.
I don't know. So just let's talk a little bit about those exercises,
yes,
because I was fascinated by this when you said about. Can you just tell us what your physiotherapist advised you and what you had to do?
Yes. What we did when the first week that we went along, and that was one of the main things that made me get better, because as I arrived there, I expected to see people a bit like me who were still, they had aches and pains, but they were, you know, they were still quite, still a bit mobile. And I got the fright of my life when I walked in and saw people in wheelchairs, walking sticks, being brought by ambulance to the physiotherapy that I was going to, and I couldn't believe it. And I thought, oh, I can't turn out like this.
Yeah.
That scared me. Really, really scared me. So what the physiotherapist done with us, they didn't explain it as good now, and again, I found out a lot of this just by doing investigations myself. However, what they done was, they had us all lying on the floor, and they started with imaginary stretches. So you lay on the floor, and you didn't stretch your arm, but you just imagined in your head that they had nice relaxing music on, and everyone lay with their eyes closed, and you imagined the muscle between your shoulder and your elbow stretching, and then you would imagine the stretch going further down until eventually it went down to the fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
And you did that with every part of your body, but you didn't move, you just imagined this happening. And it's not till now that I realised, because at that point I didn't, and it's very similar to when you read exercises, the brain thinks you've done them.
It doesn't know any different, does it?
It doesn't know any different.
That's right. And one of the specialists or the experts that we have on our programme is Dr. David Hamilton, and that he's got a background in drugs and placebos, and you know, he's a doctor of research around all of that. And he has written some fantastic books that explain exactly that.
Yes.
That, you know, the brain does not know the difference between whether you're doing it or you're not doing it.
Exactly.
And so for people that are at that stage where they're in so much pain, they're bedridden,
yes,
that's the starting point, isn't
absolutely
it?
And that was what we did the very first week. We didn't move off the floor, we didn't move a muscle, but we imagined ourselves doing it. And we started off with the imaginary stretches. And then the following week, we actually did those stretches. And then the week after that, and it just increased, until we were actually, at the very end, we did circuit training.
My goodness. That's amazing, isn't it? What was the exercise you talked about where you have to, say, do, was it like repetition?
Yes, that was actually, wasn't the physio, that was our personal trainer.
Ah, okay.
It was a personal trainer I had at one point because I had come off the medication.
Yeah.
And I had decided that I wanted to lose weight because I was carrying a extra weight, which I wanted to get rid of. So I decided to come off the medication because another doctor that I'd went to had said to me, the amitriptyline isn't helping.
Yeah.
So and at that point, when I then investigated, because I'm very like that, I like to investigate things. I investigated the amitriptyline and didn't realise that it's actually an addictive drug. Nobody told me that. I wouldn't have taken it to begin with.
No.
And that you can't just come off it. That if you come off amitriptyline and stop taking it, what happens is the body, because the drug puts you straight into level 4 sleep, your body, you don't dream at all when you're on it. Because, so you, when you go to sleep at 11 o'clock, you're in level 4 sleep from 11 o'clock right through to the next morning. So the body really gets to repair itself.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not dreaming at all. But when you come off that medication, the body tries to catch up in all the dream sleep that it's missed.
So it's like nightmares?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
So what happens is it can then turn into nightmares. Mm-hmm. And if you're dreaming the whole night, the body's not repairing itself again.
So you can go backwards.
So you can go backwards.
Yeah.
And that's why all the people that my GP knew that had tried to come off it
couldn't stand it. No, I can see that, definitely.
So, but I came off it. I weaned myself off it gradually. I just stopped taking, first of all, took, instead of the 30 milligrams every night for a week, I took 20 milligrams. Then the following week, I took 10 milligrams. Then the following week, I took 5 milligrams. And then every second night, the following week, every second night, I took 5 milligrams. Gradually, I was maybe only on 1 a week.
Yeah.
And gradually weaned myself off it so that the body wouldn't go into this start of, oh, dream sleep, we need to dream, need to dream, need to dream.
It's really interesting, isn't it, the link between level 4 sleep and repair.
Yes.
It's so important for us to understand when you've got these conditions.
Yes. So I got myself a personal trainer and he investigated it all, and what he said was when he started me off with doing, especially when you're doing weights, now I found the weights for me was what really, really improved my aches and pains.
Right, okay.
So when you normally exercise, you push up and come back. If you've got a weight, say you're doing a weight and you're doing a bench, you're lying on the bench and you're doing a bench press.
So yeah.
You push up and then you slowly come down.
Yeah.
Because that's what strengthens the muscle.
Yes.
But with people with fibromyalgia, Greg had said that you push up slowly and then let it drop right away. So it's the opposite way of normal exercise.
That's really, really helpful. Really interesting. So really what we've got there is we've got from visualisation from when you're really chronic.
Yes.
Chronically unwell.
Yes.
And that gradual process of building up.
Yes.
And then when you are well, actually learning how to exercise in a different way.
And then you will be able, because now I can exercise normally.
And you don't have any problems.
And I don't have any problems.
Fantastic. How long have you been free now?
Probably about 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's excellent, I think.
Maybe. No, maybe. Let's think. What is this? This is 2011, isn't it? Yes. And I was on the medication, so it's 2005. Yeah, about 4 years.
Yeah.
Yes. More so in the last 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Completely free.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. Good stuff.
And so, funny enough, 2.5 years ago was when my husband and I split.
That's amazing, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So what has changed for you now?
What has changed for me now is that I can do anything I want with my children, within reason, obviously. For instance, 1 year we went to Florida, and I was able to walk about with my son on my shoulders.
Fantastic. It seems like that other people just take for granted, doesn't it?
I could lift my children. And even, like, for instance, you know, my son, who's now 13, and I'll go to lift, he'll say, but Mum, what about your fibromyalgia? And I say, oh, I haven't had anything like that for years, and I can do lots of things. I go out cycling with the children. I go swimming with them. I just go out walking.
Yeah.
Anything like that.
Excellent. That's brilliant, isn't it? I know that you work very intuitively when you're as a therapist.
Yes.
What do you notice in people with chronic exhaustive illnesses?
A lot of people come to me. For instance, one of my clients actually, quite a few years ago, came to me and she was complaining of the same things, same symptoms. And because obviously I know about it. And with fibromyalgia, what they say is to be diagnosed with fibromyalgia, you need to have had various areas of the body to have pain,
mm-hmm.
not all at the same time, but in different areas,
yes.
moving about
yes.
for at least 3 months.
Yes.
And there's certain areas that are tender when you touch them.
Right.
So right away, I touched this girl's, the areas that needed to be touched, and I said to her, you know, I think that you could be suffering from fibromyalgia. So she went to her doctor, got herself referred, and she was.
Brilliant, so you were able to,
yes.
to really
yes.
pick it up.
But what I've noticed is that people who suffer with fibromyalgia or ME, they tend to have other problems going on within their life. And with regards to beauty therapy, people come and they begin to feel very relaxed with you. So they start to tell you about their personal life, their work life, their relationship with their families, things like that. And it tends to be that affects people who have emotional problems, or their work life is so hectic, they're just rushing about mad, and they need to change things, but they keep ignoring it.
Like we did, like we did. I know. So it's great though, because when you do spot it like that.
Yes. And a client's husband had it as well.
Yeah.
And again, I tried so much to tell him.
Yeah.
How to make himself better, because he used to say, why are you the way you are? Mm. You know, and I still have that. You know, my partner's sister-in-law has it, and that their family can't believe. They keep saying, well, why isn't Liz like that? And anyone that I meet, when I say, because I need to stop saying that I've got fibromyalgia, because I don't now.
But it was a few years of saying
it. You know, so I'm still so used to saying, and they say, you've had fibromyalgia, because everyone that, well, not everyone, but the majority of people, they think, well, how can she do that? And why is she not suffering pain?
But you got informed. Didn't you? You got informed, you took action.
I got informed, yes, with the rheumatologist. He was a really good rheumatologist that really knew his stuff.
Yeah.
However, a lot of it, I'm that type of person that once someone, I need a label. Some people don't,
yeah.
But I need a label, because once I've got a label, I can say, right, I'm going to take that label and I'm going to find out.
Yeah.
Everything I can about it.
Yeah.
So the majority of the stuff, I stumbled across it. I'm a great evaluator of things, whether it be work, relationships, life.
Yeah.
And I'm very good at looking back and thinking, right, how did that happen? What went wrong? And how can I change it?
Yeah. So totally cause and effect person. And that's
yes.
how you have to be, isn't it,
yes.
to recover from this?
Yes.
Absolutely. So, what advice do you wish someone had given you when you were struggling with your health?
Before I was diagnosed, I wish someone had sat me down and said to me, look at what's going on in your life. Look at the fact I had 3 jobs. I was in a relationship that was causing me a lot of stress. I was carrying a lot of after a certain amount of time of being with my husband, I ended up putting weight on as well, because I'm a stress eater, and when I'm stressed I eat.
Yeah.
So that doesn't help either. So I wish someone had sat me down and said, you know, at that point I was much younger then. Whether it's when you're older, you realise, don't you? But I was much younger then. But I wish someone had sat me down then and said to me, you know, look at, evaluate your relationship, evaluate your life, what's going on, and that this is your body telling you something needs to change, but only you can work that out.
Brilliant. Brilliant advice. So for you now, I know you take great care of yourself nowadays, don't you?
Yes, I do.
And that, again, it's that common denominator with those of us that have come through the other side.
Yes. I mean, I used to be a size 22, and I'm now a size 16.
Yeah, so your nutrition.
Yes, nutrition.
So what are the things you do to make sure that you keep really well?
The first and foremost thing that I do, because what I feel in my life is stress. Stress affects me.
Yeah.
So the minute that something causes a lot of stress in my life, I change it. And I have done just in the last couple of years, because I resigned from a very stressful job, because I could feel myself becoming, I felt like I was going back slightly, and I wasn't feeling as good as what I was.
Yeah.
And it was just after I had moved from Scotland to England. So I resigned from that job and went back into my industry, because I was teaching at that point, and it was very stressful. So the first thing is stress, definitely. The other thing is sleep. You need to get a good night's sleep. You need to make sure that you're going to bed at a regular time, and trying to stick to that.
Yeah.
With regards to work, prioritising, like, what do I really need to do? Again, linked to stress.
Yeah.
So do I need to do all of those hours? No. Restrict the amount of hours that you're doing, the amount of pressure that you're putting on yourself.
Yeah.
That's another thing. And the other third thing for me is I eat a good diet. I juice now, and I don't just juice, it's not just fruit, it's vegetables.
Yeah.
I eat very healthy. I eat a lot of fish and fruit and veg, and Jason Vail is a great, there's a lot of books that Jason Vail has with regards to nutrition, with the juicing, which is really good. So I do a lot of that. I'm careful of the products that I use with regards to what I'm putting on my body as well as in it.
Yeah.
Coffee, alcohol, chocolate, all of that. I cannot have any caffeine. If I have any caffeine, then I've got to have it during the day. And if I have any more than, I'll say, I'm very max 2 cups, that's me. I can't sleep the rest of the night.
I'm exactly the same. So you have to know that that's the response that your body is going to get.
Yes.
So you get to know it very well, don't you?
Yes.
And you put those things first.
Yes. Like, for instance, last night I come home and I had been out all day and never come home till about 9:30 last night. And I came in and I had a thumping sore head.
Yes.
And I knew, first of all, I hadn't drunk anywhere near enough water that I needed to. And secondly, I was tired and I felt, right, I came in and I thought, I need to go to bed. And sometimes it is, if you feel tired, you say, right, I can't do that. I'm not going to push myself to get to that point where I'm absolutely exhausted.
Yeah, which you would have done years ago.
Yes.
Yeah, so would I.
Because I would have come home and did my housework, and did my ironing, and...
Even though you felt dreadful.
Yes.
Yeah. Whereas nowadays, no way. Absolutely.
I've been asked to do extra hours at the end of the week, and I said no.
Yes. And that's funny, because I was asked to do some extra things today, and I said no too. So, the key is about putting you first, isn't it?
Got to put you first. Taking care of you, because no one else is going to do it.
No, that's right.
It's down to you.
And saying no.
Yes. No, I'm not doing that. And realising that if you do it, what effects it's going to have on your body.
Yeah, and that you will pay a price.
Yes.
Well, thanks so much, Liz. It's been absolutely lovely talking to you.
And
I know that you're going to help so many people, because we get so many people that are just at their wits' end with fibromyalgia.
And I know that feeling very, very well. And I wish that something like this was about when, or I knew of something like this when I was going through it.
Yeah.
Because what I do now, I've had to find out for myself.
Yeah, so that's why it takes too long, doesn't it?
Yes, it takes exactly. too long.
Well, these very wise people are actually on the programme now, and I'm sure today you've really helped them with so many tips. So thanks so much, Liz.
You're very welcome.
Great. Thank you.